Hello, everybody, and welcome to Little Fish, the weekly podcast where we, the No Such Thing as a Fish team, take your facts, the facts from the audience, and we talk about them, we analyze them, we tear them to shreds. And here to do that with me are my fellow hosts, Dan Schreiber and James Harkin.
Hello.
Hello. Sorry, I left a weird pause there.
It's okay. We should say we're doing this in three undisclosed locations. Hang on. No, James. Okay. That seems to be a connection issue. Happen a lot.
That was just me trying to be funny, Dan. Don't worry.
No, yeah. I knew that. I was there doubling down on your funny.
See, this is how natural it always seems as soon as you're recording remotely, which we are. Yes. Undisclosed locations. We've been asked to go to our separate bunkers. And Andrew Hunter Murray is not with us, but I think we're going to be okay. So he has sent us some facts from listeners, hasn't he?
He has.
We still make him peruse the inbox. Has anyone got a great fact from a listener to share?
Can I do one that he hasn't sent me that I got independently?
Yes.
Oh,
just because
wow.
I know if he was here, he wouldn't allow this. But seeing as he's away, we should like subvert the genre a little bit.
Okay.
Someone called Dave Swaney sent me this, and it is to do with a big rail crash in Clapham that was caused by an overworked signal engineer. And the government made a hidden report to establish all the problems that occurred. And this report was named after Sir Anthony Hidden.
Come on.
And he basically, that's the reason why if you work as a train crew, you need 12 hours rest between shifts.
Right.
And you have to have at least one day off in any fortnight.
Wow.
Oh, really?
But yeah, named by Sir Anthony Hidden.
Very good.
And I replied to Dave saying, well, you know what? I'm not really a big fan of these kind of facts. Mm. And Dave said, oh yeah, sorry. I know Dan is the one who's pushing this trend, but you're my favorite. So he's another one who can't tell the difference between Dan and Andy.
Wow, this is getting wild. But you're doing Andy's work for him now. You've converted without knowing. You were filling that book up every week now.
You are.
Well, that's a great fact. That's awesome. I got one that was sanctioned, that was allowed in by Andrew Hunter Murray. This is from Ray Honeyset. Ray says, my fact is that when tomato plants are under attack from hungry caterpillars, they produce a chemical that makes caterpillars more likely to eat each other than the plant.
What?
Yeah, which is amazing. Really? And Ray adds, my mother tried to tell Dan this fact a few years ago when she lived in South London next to him and would share a commute with him into town. Unfortunately, she forgot the details of this and instead told him that scientists have found that tomatoes eat caterpillars. I am emailing to set the record straight.
Do you remember this instance, Dan?
I do. I remember his mum. She was awesome.
Can I just say, I think tomatoes do eat caterpillars. Well, they eat. Certainly eat insects, for sure.
Okay, and they sense?
Well, they have like a fluffy stalk, don't they? And I think the fluffiness of the stalk is to kind of trap insects, and then they fall down to the ground, decompose into the earth, and then the plant can eat the chemicals.
No way.
I think so.
Really?
That's interesting. Well, the further details on this particular method to stop the caterpillars from eating them is the tomato plants release chemicals called methyl jasminate. And the idea is that it makes the plant taste so disgusting that they would rather eat each other than continue to eat the plant itself. And what's amazing on top of that is different plants smell that smell and release their own plant smell that stops caterpillars.
So that's why they end up eating each other, not just another plant. Because it does seem illogical if I've got dinner and I'm eating peas and I think I don't like peas, I don't instinctively think, okay, I'll eat the person sitting next to me.
Can you imagine like the TripAdvisor reviews? The gazpacho was so bad, I ate my own friends.
Yeah. That's wild, incredible. Isn't it? This is John Orrick, who's an evolutionary ecologist in Wisconsin, said basically the plant rearranges the menu for the caterpillar to make the other caterpillars the optimal choice.
Crazy. It's a truly amazing fact and would have made The Very Hungry Caterpillar a much more interesting book, actually, although maybe not as child appropriate. I had a great one from Haley Abramson, and she is a biomedical engineer, so she knows what she's talking about. She's working in America and she creates medical devices for hemodynamic monitoring, which I think is watching what's happening to your blood. And she said that the human heart uses over 5 kilos of ATP, which is the molecule that you use in your heart to release energy, uses over 5 kilos of it every day, which is 15 times the weight of the heart itself. Now, wow. I got very into ATP at this point because I realized you learn about it at school. You don't really know. Well, I don't really remember what it is. And it's universal across all life. Every single living cell needs to use ATP to get energy. And I didn't realize that the way we get it is literally we have this molecule in us and we break it down and that releases energy and then we build it up again. Your body contains only 250 grams of it any moment and you produce your own body weight in it every day because we just break it down, rebuild it, break it down, rebuild it. Kind of a mad Sisyphean task we're all doing, actually. But then...
yeah, it almost seems like the entire point of life is just to generate and regenerate ATP.
Yes.
It?
Yeah.
And like you see these sort of stories in New Scientist or whatever saying, oh, we found a new kind of animal that lives on rocks or whatever. Mm. And what it actually means is there's some kind of tiny cellular life which is turning stuff into ATP, making energy, and then making more ATP, and then making more energy, and just doing that again and again and again.
God, so is ATP, is that what's in charge of us all, do you think?
I think that's... it is.
It's ATP has created life, so it can be created and destroyed.
Whoa. I'd never heard of it, ATP. Had you two? I mean, James, it sounds like you definitely have.
Yeah, yeah. You went to an unusual school.
I think in fairness, I don't think I learned it in GCSE biology.
Fair.
I feel like I learned it through doing 15 years of QI work.
That period where you ate nothing but rocks. I think it was in that moment.
But yeah, great fact. Great fact from Hayley. Anyone else got anything else?
Okay, here's another sciencey one. Jason Sanderman Allen tells us that in the time it takes to say this fact, the world's factories will have made more transistors than there are stars in the Milky Way.
What?
Oh my what? God.
What?
People do work very hard, don't they, in some factories?
That's
to be
hard.
Fair, it says like the time it takes to read this fact, but... the email's quite long, so I don't know if it's the entire email or just that sentence. But basically, a transistor, like, in my head, a transistor used to be like, oh, it's like a radio, a transistor radio or whatever. Mm. But actually, a transistor is a tiny little switch that you get in any electrical device. And in your laptop, there are millions of them. In your microphone, there are millions of them. In your headphones, there are millions. They're in everything. And it's just, it's basically the thing which is either a zero or a one.
So there's, I think, an estimated about like 100 billion stars in the Milky Way, right? Okay. So surely we need just one day in the factory and we have enough. That's it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We don't need any more.
Have we got an oversupply? So it's like, stop. Someone, where's the off button? We've got all these bloody switches, but where's the off button? Yeah, that is wild.
I mean, that's a lot, 100 billion.
Well, look, basically, the modern day is ATP and transistors. That's
yeah, sounds like it.
That's how we're going down in history.
I happen to know that the co-inventor of the transistor was a guy called John Bardeen. And when he co-won his Nobel Prize, he was told off by someone who was there, either the committee or just someone high up, for not bringing his family along. He was like, where are your kids? You didn't bring your family. And he said, ah, no, it's okay. I'll bring them to the next one. Next time I win, they'll be here. He won it again, and he brought his kids. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
One of the few scientists to get the double Nobel.
What a dickhead. I'd never thought I'd hear this. Sorry, no, what an amazing guy. I was just still reeling from the surprise of hearing the sentence come out of your mouth. I happen to know that the co-inventor of the transistor. It's just such a casual happen to know.
Because I mentioned John Bardeen not too long ago on Fish, because when he found out that he had won his second Nobel Prize, he was in his garage and he went to open the door of the garage to go to the party celebrating it. And the transistor failed and he was locked in his garage. So the thing that he won the Nobel Prize for the first time stopped him from getting to his party the second time.
All I would say is that we always do this podcast in person most of the time. And when we're in person, we don't have our laptops or our phones or anything and we're just chatting. But I watched a documentary about online chess yesterday, where basically they said as soon as it went online and people weren't in the room together, they all cheated. So if anyone from, I'm not saying that Dan didn't know who that guy was.
Wow.
But if anyone in the future is saying, I just happen to know, then there could be something afoot.
Outrageous.
That's an outrageous claim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won't have it. I'm the host here and I'm kicking you off the show for this kind of slander against your fellow man.
I'm not even on the internet right now.
This is all pre-recorded nuggets, Dan sent us, that we're interspersing.
Okay. Would it be great if I turned my camera on the laptop and you saw six researchers sitting there just showing me, showing me facts on big bits of paper?
We all know he's too analog to be able to use the internet.
John Bardoon. What is it? Better spelling. Give it to the guy with better spelling.
Okay, go on then, Dan. Give us one of your facts from your non-internet perusing.
Well, this one is great. This one is from Draco, just called Draco. Draco says there are over 100 people taking a road trip across the USA together. They've covered over 40,000 miles, yet none of them have left their homes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So this, and I want to thank...
Can you guys hear there's either an aeroplane or a helicopter going above my house at the moment?
I can hear that. Yeah.
Okay.
Is it anything to do with your fact?
Dan sent her to take you out your betrayal.
Question my use of internet. This is... Again, thank you, Draco, so much for introducing me to this. But this is a website called neal.fun, N-E-A-L.fun. Oh. And it's a bunch of online interactive games that you can do. And one of them is called Internet Road Trip. And you click onto it, and it's a virtual map in which a car, you know, when you go on Google Maps and you have all the arrows and you press one of the arrows, well, it's this. But right now, I'm on it right now. There are 114, despite not being on the internet, 114 drivers right now are on it. And whoever votes most for which arrow, that wins. And that's where the car turns.
Oh,
do you
cool.
see what I'm saying? So it's
it's
an ongoing trip that is being voted for by people. I'm going to vote right now. I've just voted. Yep, it's gone my way.
Oh,
how cool is that? And honestly, this site is amazing, neal.fun. There's a game that you can play on it, which is called Cursor Camp. And you just give your cursor a little holiday. And you play, I just played volleyball earlier with someone from the Netherlands.
So sad. This is holidays of the future and sport of the future and driving of the future. It's all so sad.
Highly recommend it, guys. This is incredible, incredible
was this,
site.
Was this site made by the boffins at fun.com?
You'd hope so. Yes. Only the brains at fun.com could come up with this.
This really does remind me of the old days of the internet and being at university and one of my friends going, oh, you need to go on this website where you can play some games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience yesterday where I felt like I had gone back in technological time when, you know, when you can't, Google can't open a website because you're not connected to the internet. And so it says, press spacebar to play. And I've literally never pressed it. And I pressed it. Have you guys ever done it?
No.
Well, can you do play Pac-Man or something?
No, it's literally you just make a dot jump over some obstacles and it just keeps moving and you hit spacebar whenever you want it to jump. Did that for about 5 minutes and then thought, is this how I want to spend my life on this earth?
Yeah.
And the answer was yes, I did it for another 4 hours. I have another cool fact, and this is from Hugh Fraser from Queensland, who says, long-time listener, third-time emailer. Thanks for letting us know. I have a fact for you. The man responsible for organising plays in Elizabethan England was allowed to imprison people at will when they offended him or didn't work hard enough. I really feel like Andy's given me this one because he knows it's a fantasy of mine. They were freed from jail when he decided they'd served their time. And this, I think we might have mentioned him before, Edmund Tilney, who's Master of the Revels under Queen Elizabeth.
Is he the guy who was legally allowed to kidnap children to be in his choir or something?
Maybe he was. It sounds like the kind of thing that would be a perk of the job. Of Master of the Revels, possibly. He's definitely, I mainly know him because he's one of the baddies in Shakespeare in Love. Have you seen that? He's the guy who keeps on censoring Shakespeare's plays and generally gets a very bad rap, but he's actually a good guy and he reformed the whole art scene under Queen Elizabeth and was the reason Shakespeare was famous.
Starring friend of the podcast, Joseph Fiennes, just for listeners of the past.
Is he a friend?
He almost became one. Just before you came back, he almost became a solid character.
Was he because he's only been in that one film, whereas all the other Fiennes have been in loads of other films?
Yeah, his brother's really nailed acting in multiple movies.
That is so harsh. I could definitely name another if you gave me the internet in a couple of hours. That's a great fact. Anyone else got any other facts?
I've got a few from down under, from New Zealand, which are quite nice. One comes in from Connor, who says, if you sold your house with this company and they're called Arizzo, A-R-I-Z-T-O, they're a real estate company in New Zealand, you could quite possibly end up working with someone called Andy, someone called Dan, or someone called Anna James.
Yeah.
These are all employees of Arizzo. If you're looking for a house, Sid, and you want it to have a sort of fish-flavoured theme to your estate.
What a random thing to find out.
Yes. Hang on, why does this person know that? Does this person work for that company?
No, I don't think so. They don't say so. It's just they were going around the site. Maybe they were looking for a place to rent or buy, and that's cool. What they discovered.
Frantically Googling our names over and over again.
There are also three other choices of James, if you wanted to use Anna James as one and you need one more at the table, there's three other Jameses. Thank you very much, Connor. But then we get one from William Wilson, also from New Zealand, who writes that Eden Park Stadium in New Zealand has its own pet rock. So when the stadium was rebuilt in 2011 for the Rugby World Cup, this rock was there and they considered getting rid of it, but it's so massive that they decided in the end, let's just build a room around it. And now when you go on a tour of the stadium, they take you to the rock room to meet the pet rock.
No way.
That is part of the sort of history of this place, which is pretty amazing.
Why did they build a room around it? That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the idea was it would cost so much. It's a volcanic rock. It's thousands of years old. It's 50 feet plus. They just thought this is such a big job, it's easier just to leave it there in place and put
it. Sorry, you said it's 50 feet plus, the rock?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah, yeah.
I was imagining a kind of a large pebble.
What?
Okay. It's a big rock.
It's big.
Isn't Mecca got a big rock in it? That big building in Mecca's got like a meteorite or something. I think so. And they built a big building around it. And now millions of people every year go to visit it.
Really? Yeah.
I think so.
And that's different to going on a pilgrimage to Mecca. Hold on. There are loads of Muslims going on pilgrimage to Mecca. And then there are loads of rock fans going on pilgrimage to the rock next door. Or is
no,
it the same
no.
thing?
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. Got it. Okay. I was just thinking what a low maintenance pet that would be. Because I was thinking about pets the other day and thinking maybe I'll cave eventually and go for stick insects because they're the easiest. But that is easier.
It's
stick insects
good.
Are not easy. We had pet stick. We had pet stick insects when we were kids, and they would die 10 a week.
Yeah, but what's easy about them is that you can buy more, and no one ever knows.
Well, 10 a maybe. Week. How many do you have, James?
I may be wrong about 10 a week. In fact, I am exaggerating. But you would just put them in big jars. We had them a lot. They wouldn't do anything at all. And you would kind of be hard-pressed to know that they were even there. And the only way that you'd know that they died is because they stopped pooing. Right. And you'd be like, oh, I don't have to clean the poo anymore, so they must be dead.
God, it'd be tempting to just leave it at that.
Yeah.
How long does it take a kid to go, you know what, should we not buy anymore?
There was a craze for pet rocks in the 70s. It was I suppose it was just like people would go to the shop and buy a pair of googly eyes and put them on a rock and say, this is my pet rock. But it was a thing.
Jesus.
Yeah, right.
Tough time, the 70s.
By the way, the Eden Park venue that this rock is at, it's kind of the national venue of New Zealand. It's where the All Blacks play. And they've got a record there of consistent wins since 1994. And I think it's 53 consistent wins. They've not lost. They've had a few draws, but they are yet to lose in their own stadium for that long.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
And it must be the rock.
It must be the rock. The thought is that they only invite teams to play them there when they absolutely know they're going to thrash them, when they know that they're just not in a good shape.
I don't think that can be true.
That's the sort of ongoing joke in New Zealand, apparently, from the sports websites I've been reading.
We should probably move on to our custodians soon. I just want to give Dan a holiday tip for if you ever want to take a holiday that's not just a virtual one on your computer.
Yeah.
Because this is from Rich Schaffer. Fact that was sent in, and he was saying, I was driving through Southern Virginia in the US and saw signs for Dan Daniel Memorial Park in the city of Danville. Specifies Danville is not named after the politician Dan Daniel, nor is Dan Daniel named after Danville. And yet...
They're all named after that real estate agent from New Zealand.
Okay, we have reached that time in the show where we bestow some facts upon our lucky Club Fish listeners. And we have some facts from our previous podcast to give to you. Does anyone have a fact they want to let go of?
Yep, I have one here. This is for Louisa. And the fact is... Ancient Jerusalem's lost property office just involved shouting about what you had lost in the hope that somebody had found it.
That's a good system.
Such a good system.
Presumably you have to shout in a very particular place so people know where you're shouting, or you just walk around shouting for it.
Yeah.
Was it you told a specific shouter what you'd lost, didn't you? Mm. And they walked around, they were the town crier, but the lost property town crier. Because then I think this is the one where we discovered that James has actually been to Town Crier Championships, or he claimed to have been to them. Is that true?
I have been there, yeah. There's photographic evidence. I didn't take part. I was just there as a viewer.
How do you think you'd go? Would you be good in a Town Crier Championship?
I don't think so. I don't think I have the bass in my voice to be a good Town Crier.
Needs Andy or Dan, maybe. Some of that.
I got some bass. Yeah, I might be able to do it. Hey, do you guys remember when I was on the way into the Royal Institution for our recent run of live gigs, and on the train and the other end of the carriage, I heard a man on his phone going, "Hi there, yes, I've just left my second son at the station. Could somebody please collect him and hold him?" And I'm just wondering to what extent this lost property box, what would be like the weirdest thing that you would hear someone shouting? Because I've never heard anything weirder than that.
I see what someone shouting, a second son, anyone found a second son?
Yeah, like
that kind of thing.
So what kind of lost property are you shouting for?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be something rude, isn't it? It's like, how much do you want to face embarrassment to say, you know, the pink fluffy dildo with a goat attached to it?
Yes. Yeah.
Fluffy dildo. Okay. It's just going to need regular cleaning, that's all.
Interesting idea.
I wouldn't know personally, but you're right. It is an interesting idea. And I think if it's washing machine friendly, and I've got a duster actually, which has a really useful removable cover, which could easily double up as a fluffy dildo.
Lost fluffy dildo. It's machine friendly and it has a removable sheath. So it's very usable. You could reuse it. Anyone seen it?
Imagine 20 years from now, Anna's going to be sitting in an interview and they're going to say, "Now, not many people know this, Anna, but before you started your humongous fluffy dildo empire, you were a podcaster, weren't you?"
I prefer to forget about those times. They're just an embarrassment.
Okay, here's another fact. This one now is under the custodianship of Julia and Brandon McKay. And Julia and Brandon, your fact is that the man who discovered why we sweat did so by getting in a sauna with a dog, a steak, and an egg.
I remember this guy.
Me too. What a wonderful fact this was.
What a lad. Wasn't it just to prove that it was hot enough? Like, people said they thought the thermometer was wrong. And so he said, okay, well, you can cook a steak in here. That's how bloody hot it is.
And an egg and a dog.
Cook a dog. Why take the dog? We believe you with the steak and the egg. It's fine.
You've got to share the steak with someone.
Yeah, I think this is the guy who discovered about thermoregulation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What a laugh. What a fun party that sauna party was. Okay, here is a fact for Ferry Hunt. And this is the fact that, oh my gosh, how weird this has just come up. This is the fact that stick insect sex can last for 79 days and the insects are stuck together the whole time.
Yeah. And that fact was originally read out by someone who kept stick insects as a pet when they were younger.
And did you spend 79 days straight staring at your little cubicle?
Honestly, my parents taught me about the birds and the stick insects.
So funny. Was this show was Up the Creek. I think this was a live show. They're all reminding me. Because quite often, despite all these years, this is the show that often gets cited as, if you're going to start listening to Fish, this is the episode to listen to.
Don't say that, because it was over 10 years ago now.
So. I know. We peaked.
Episode 82, if you're listening to this and you want to go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I believe
downhill from there.
I think it was up the creek, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, well, anything from the Far Inferior episode 83?
Yes, this fact is for Vegana, Vegana Natural. And your fact is the seventh time park ranger Roy Sullivan was struck by lightning coincided with the 22nd time he fought a bear off with a stick.
A dang classic.
Yeah, Roy Sullivan, what an interesting character. And the further you go along the story each time of when he's getting hit by lightning, the more improbable and more ridiculous it is. Just one of those fantastic stories that just keeps giving.
Yeah. I read an article about people who get struck by lightning, and there's like a conference every year that they all go to, because actually it's a really, like, it's obviously very bad at the time, but the people who live with it have a really difficult time of it. And so they have like support groups where they all get together and stuff like that. But there is like various different things that happen to you if you get struck by lightning. And I am going to look, because I have it as a fact in my future facts file.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Ooh. Some behind spoiler. The scenes here. James has had all his facts basically since we started Fish in a file. Like we scrounge around every week looking for headline facts. James has had them all since day one. It's amazing.
Yeah. And actually, there's so many of them. I have got like 20 of them that are to do with lightning. Mm. But yes, symptoms of being struck by lightning include food tasting like glue, sexual dysfunction, and the inability to sweat.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, you see where I was going?
I see who you're suggesting might have been struck by lightning at some point.
Yeah. Well, it's unfair. Andy's not here to defend himself. So,
which Andy? Okay, here is another fact. This one is now under the custodianship of Walter. And Walter, your fact is that in 2015, America's Hero Dog of the Year award was won by a cat.
Unbelievable. They can't even find enough heroic dogs to fill that prize. And there's an episode of Harry McClary based on this that was reading only a couple of nights ago, isn't there? When
is
Harry...
There?
As you'll all know, being Harry McClary fanatics, Harry McClary wins the best cat in show competition.
Harry McClary from Donaldson's Dairy.
That's absolutely correct. Right. Yeah, that one.
And when you say episode, is it now a TV show or do you mean a book?
No, I mean a book. I just forgot the word book.
Okay.
Yeah. That'll happen.
The interesting thing about Harry McClary from Donaldson's Dairy for British people is that he's from a dairy, but the books were written in New Zealand, where a dairy is very different. A dairy is like a corner shop in New Zealand. So it's not a place where you get milk from or anything like that. So in Britain, we always think that Harry McClary lives in a place where there's loads of cows and they're getting milk, but actually he lives in a corner shop.
Amazing when you first told me that. It's like everything falls into place. Because Harry McClary, there are never cows in it. No. And there's not this bucolic countryside landscape. It's sort of suburbia.
Mm.
So yeah, not interesting to our New Zealand listeners, which Dan has confirmed we have a lot of.
And you know who told me that? It was the son of the people who wrote The Little Yellow Digger, which is, I think, the second most famous kids book from New Zealand.
Yes.
Wow.
The Little Yellow Digger got stuck and a bigger digger pulled it out and all that kind of stuff.
You know their kids.
Oh, mate, I got my showbiz pals just like the rest of you.
You just don't drop them into clanging forced anecdotes like we do on the show. Damn it, that's wonderful.
Okay, hero dogs. Excellent. Enjoy that one, Walter. I have got a fact for Rolf Lindsay. And this fact is that the earliest known penalty for illegal parking was to be impaled on a stake. Yeah, this is just in the 50s in Leicester Square. And no, it wasn't. It was thousands of years ago, wasn't it? I think it was about 4,000 years ago.
Was it the one of those old codes of Hammurabi or whatever they're called?
I think it was one of those, like the Hammurabi code. Yes, it was in Nineveh. And it was the royal road. So I suppose only the king was allowed to waltz up and down there.
I'm trying to work out if this show will go out before the second episode of our Royal Institution run, where the crowd were baying for blood for any social infraction that anyone could make. Like we would say, oh, someone got fined for using their phone on the train. Yeah. And the crowd was like, "Mom, find them more, string them up."
Turns out we've got some really hardline fans. Oh, they're going to be loving this.
was
all
so
listeners
funny.
Going, damn right, should still have that for parking infractions.
I've got one here for Chris Martin. This is your fact now. Female corn earthworm moths go invisible after sex.
Wow.
It's a good fact because A, it starts with a thing you've never heard of, the corn earthworm moth. And B, it heads into magic.
Yeah, it seems unbelievable.
And C, it's going to Chris Martin from Coldplay, presumably it must be him.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
Whose ex-wife runs a sex toy website that in future will presumably be selling fluffy dildos.
Wow.
And wow. When we were last in New Zealand, on the day we were in New Zealand, guess where Coldplay played a gig?
Oh.
I'll give you a clue. There's a big rock there.
Oh. I can get this. Hang on. Come on, guys. Sorry, just talking to the research team. Eden Park.
Eden Park, that's right. Because do you remember we had some issues with trying to get guests over because all of the flights were booked out because all the fans were going to watch Coldplay at Eden Park.
Of course. And that must be where Chris Martin heard of us, all that kerfuffle, and that's why he's writing in now.
Must be.
And he'll love that fact because he, of course, wrote the song The Scientist, and it is a science-y fact.
Oh, my God.
So it's like
talk
we tailored it to him.
Blowing shit wide open. Okay, the last one for today, I think, goes out to Jill M. Jill M, your fact is that every week, two people in Sydney get bitten by ticks and become allergic to meat.
Wow.
Those two people need to get out of Sydney.
This was huge a few years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's still everywhere.
It still happens. People can get allergic to meat through being bitten by ticks, for sure. But gone out of the news a little bit.
Right.
I always like it because it's called the Alpha Gal something, like Alpha Gal Syndrome. Or something when you get bitten by it. Yeah, it just sounds really cool. It sounds like something from Mean Girls.
Yeah. I'm surprised that there hasn't been a sort of like a vigilante group of vegans who haven't collected up these ticks and have just been spraying them around in people's homes and getting them allergic to meat so that we literally stop it that way.
That is such a good terrorist atrocity that you've come up with.
Mm. Yeah.
Genius.
Let's hope that no one does it now because you'll be directly implicated, I think. It's such a genius idea.
I don't know. I think it still might be easier to print out lots of pictures of dogs being tortured and distribute them rather than catch these elusive
ticks. Yeah, but you've got to torture the dogs. You've got to print out the pictures. It's like,
shit, is that what they're doing?
I'm only joking, obviously. Please don't write in.
Okay, and speaking of writing in, though, please do write in because this is the end of this show. But if you want to feature in a future show, you have to write in with a good fact. It's podcast@qi.com. Andy goes through all the emails and shaves off the best stuff for us to say. And thank you to our brand new fact custodians. They are Louisa, Julianne Brandon McKay, Ferry Hunt, Vegana Natural, Walter, Rolf Lindsay, Chris Martin, and Jill M. Thank you so much. And if you want to be a fact custodian, you'll have to join Club Fish. Only way to get there. Look it up, find out how. But for now, that is it from me, James, and Dan. We will see you next week for another episode of this, or later on this week for another episode of No Such Thing as a Big Fish. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.